Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 26th day of March. I had to think about that for a second. 2020. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the show. Yeah, no, it's Thursday. Not that it really matters. Although I have a weekend still. I mean, I don't do anything with it. But I was kind of wasting them all, or a lot of them anyway. Before, two kids, there's not a whole lot of partying that goes on. But yeah, it is the weekend coming up tomorrow. So everybody get ready to do more of the same. It's like day 11? Day 11 of isolation? It's not even really isolation. This is my life. You know, when you got two kids, you don't go out very much. My Target trips have been curtailed significantly, and that's about the biggest impact on my life. Oh, and every time I cough, I think, oh my God, I'm dying. But other than that, it hasn't changed all that much. Big program for today. We are going to talk to, well, I actually already did talk to, the one and only James Golden. You know him professionally as Bo Snerdly. Yes, my buddy Bo. I called him up and said, hey, you want to chat about what's going on down in Florida? About his group that he started a while back that came on the show for? And we'll get an update on Rush Limbaugh, how he's doing. So we talk about that. So, yeah, you've got that to look forward to. All we've got to do is get to that point and a couple of points before we get there, because there are some news. At least as of this point, we're still waiting on the United States Senate to vote on this bill, this monstrosity. This bill could really be one page long. It could be incredibly simple. Unemployment insurance will be 100% of your pay starting 3 weeks ago. Maybe go 4 weeks ago. If you lost your job 4 weeks ago, until we'll say 8 weeks from now, provided your job does not restart, you get 100% of your pay. There you go. All the workers impacted by, or most of the workers impacted by coronavirus, are made whole with that. Then you offer incentives, loans, whatever, grants, however you want, tax breaks, to the companies, so that they stay afloat, so that when the unemployment insurance period lapses and goes under, there are jobs waiting for people. Crazy idea, I know. I understand what the problem with that approach is. A, who are you paying off? You can't really pay off anybody. I mean, who's going to give $25 million to the Kennedy Center with my plan? The Kennedy Center doesn't get that. Pro-abortion groups don't get any money. Democratic constituency groups don't get any money. Nancy Pelosi is apparently still bitching about a lack of her priorities in the bill, which may, by the time this happens, who knows, may throw a monkey wrench into the whole thing. This would be the second time that, and I mean this in the nicest possible way, this would be the second time that bitch came in and let her liberal agenda overrule the needs of the American people. I mean that again. Look, I understand Nancy Pelosi is grieving. Somebody dropped a house on her sister. That's got to impact people in ways that, you know, because you don't normally expect a house to fall on your sister, or really, I think, any family member, but especially your sister. So it's a tough time for Nan. But yeah, this is insane. This woman needs to have bad things happen to her. Karma needs to come around and smack her in the face with a dead carp. just because she's earned it. She's earned it in a big way. So she'll sit around and watch tens, hundreds of billions of dollars be wasted on her little pet projects, or she's going to say the economy can destroy itself. Seems to me like they're almost daring President Trump to encourage people to go back to work to try and restart the economy by trying to delay it, by trying to screw it up, by trying to mess with the markets. The last 2 days, the stock market has been up. Yes, the day before yesterday was the biggest gain in history, 2,112, 113 if you round up points. Yesterday was another huge day for the stock market. They know that the economy is ready to get rolling, and we need a bridge. We are at a chasm in the economy, and we need to get to the other side of it. The coronavirus is a gully that bifurcated everything that was going on good in the economy. And if you can build that bridge, if Congress can get people to the other side, it's going to be a little rocky for a little bit, but there's no reason to believe that things would not, in fact, keep rolling as they were before. That scares the ever-loving hell out of the Democratic Party, because they have no answer to it. All they have is Joe Biden sitting confused in his library slash basement slash whatever hell room it is, trying to string together coherent sentences and doing so ineffectively, shall we say. It's kind of funny. Yesterday, Joe Biden announced that he was starting a podcast. Relatively soon, he's going to have experts and policy people and people who knew him while he was in the White House go and come on his podcast. I imagine they're going to be chatting via Skype or something like that. The way he announced it here in his newsletter reads, let's see, let me pull this up. Quote, new podcast. My team and I are working on a new... There's no way Joe Biden has any clue what a podcast is. My team and I are working on a new podcast. It will be a program to share some more of my ideas and plans and to bring on some experts and people I've worked with in the White House. Look out for more information to subscribe and follow along! Exclamation point. There are three sentences in that paragraph I just read you, two of which end in exclamation points. Joe Biden, 77-year-old man, is a teenaged girl, or at least writes like one. Now, there's a reason that Joe Biden is starting a podcast, rather than doing, because they've already scrapped the idea of his daily briefing. If you've seen one, you know why they scrapped the idea of his daily briefing. He's terrible at reading a teleprompter. He's also clearly got coronavirus. He's coughing uncontrollably into his own hand, by the way. But he also gets lost. He also gets stammering. He stops speaking. He loses where he is. Live streaming Joe Biden is a reckless and dangerous act, opening up everybody involved in his campaign to malpractice lawsuits. So the campaign apparatus came back with the idea, hey, let's do a podcast. That way, we can record it, edit it, cut out all the incoherent babble, and try and string together, you know, what is it going to be, 15 minutes, half an hour? Occasionally. You know, it's going to be an occasional podcast. It's not going to be a daily podcast. But it will have the benefit of editing. I do have the benefit of editing if I so chose to edit, but I tend to choose to sleep over edit, so I don't do it. But they need to edit him. They desperately need to edit this guy. It'll be telling. What's also telling is that Joe Biden has to bring on experts and people he's worked with to explain his plans. It's another indication that perhaps sniffy Uncle Joe can't do that himself, which would strike me as a bit problematic were I inclined or even remotely interested in possibly considering voting for Joe Biden. I'm not. I have an IQ higher than my shoe size, so that's not really an option. But you got to admire their ingenuity. I mean, they are kind of, well, not really. I would say they're kind of screwed. Just like when we talked to Sean Parnell. It's a tough time for Canada. It's a tough time for challengers. They have to try to find a way to get into the news because they can't go out to campaign events. They can't go to meet and greets. They can't stand outside the Piggly Wiggly or whatever the grocery store chain is in your... Piggly Wiggly isn't even around me, but I just like the way it sounds. You can't do the traditional campaigning, so you've got to find new ways to do it. Joe Biden, he's not super good at the old ways of doing it. So in the idea of pulling him off of the campaign trail is actually a benefit to Joe Biden. The less he's exposed to people, the better off he is, the less they see of him. The more they see of him, they think, oh my God, I can't do that. But the less they see of him, they think, okay, yeah, maybe Joe Biden is a really good concept. That's about it to Democrats. When they listen to him, they think, I don't want to vote for this guy. I don't even know if this guy's going to make it. I don't think, is this guy aware he's running for president? So yeah, welcome to the podcasting world, Joe. Of course, his podcast will shoot to the top of the charts for a while, and then I will listen to it. And I imagine it will just be terrible. It'll just be terrible. Anyway, a couple of other things before we get you to the Bo Snerdly interview. I just want to point this out. There's a guy named Mark Fisher, Mark with a C. He is a senior editor at the Washington Post. They got a piece up there. Now, just listen to this tweet. Scott McMillan, a 56-year-old lawyer, tweeted that it's more vital to revive the economy than to save people who are, quote, not productive, end quote, like the elderly and infirm, period. So I called his parents. Mark Fisher, reporter, senior editor at the Washington Post, co-author of a book called Trump Revealed, and author of a book called Something in the Air and After the Wall, neither of which I've heard of, doesn't matter. He saw a tweet, and he tracked down the guy's parents. Now, who is this person, this Scott McMillan? Is he the new Adolf Hitler? No, he's an attorney out in California with less than 400 followers. He has 395 followers. 395 followers. Washington Post reporter sees a tweet and says, I must track this guy down. I must make a story of it. Meanwhile, the networks, aside from Fox, refused to take all of the coronavirus task force press briefing yesterday. They are doing this for a very specific reason. Donald Trump is too good at them. He is at 60% approval rating on his handling of coronavirus and 49% on job approval in Gallup, not some right-wing poll that the left can easily ignore. This is Gallup. This is their sweet spot. This is their trusted name in polling. And now suddenly Donald Trump is doing well. Part of it is that they were getting about 12 million or more viewers for those daily coronavirus task force press briefings. Why? Because people want to know what their government is doing about coronavirus. The problem is Donald Trump looks too good. Democrats look too bad, especially after Nancy Pelosi is doing what she's doing. And Democrats are demanding all of these special little carve-outs with our tax money. There's too big of a risk that that information would come up in these press briefings, and that would make Democrats look bad. So Donald Trump looks good, and Democrats do things that make them look bad. That is a recipe for disaster, and that is why all the networks are now cutting away from the press briefing and will likely stop carrying them in their entirety going forward. The other day they were whining, where's Dr. Fauci? We need to hear from Dr. Fauci. We need to hear the experts. Yesterday, President Trump left after about 20 minutes at the press briefing, leaving the vice president, who is the head of the task force, Dr. Bricks and Dr. Fauci out there. The reporters could ask them anything they wanted. That would be, allegedly, what the media was whining about there being a lack of at these press conferences in the past. They did not cut in. They did not cut back in. Some of them carried the beginning of it. And the people missed relevant information. Now reporters or producers at NBC and CNN say that they are not going to take them anymore. They might take them from the beginning, but they're going to cut away after the first lie. And maybe they'll come back after the lies stop. These people, again, are evil. These people are disgusting. These people are gross. These people are not journalists. They are activists with press credentials. Yet, I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with them insisting otherwise. The sun rises in the east. No matter how much you insist, it doesn't. And you are all liberal hacks. No matter how much you insist, you are not. Anyway, let's, before we get to the Snerdly interview, do a shout out to ancientlifeoil.com. That's where I get my CBD oil. Yes, CBD oil is all the rage. Makes you feel better, helps you with those little aches and pains, helps you with anxiety, stress, whatever it is. It's not full of THC. It's got really no THC in it. So you're not going to get high. It's just the miracle of CBD oil. And what am I talking about? Google for yourself the benefits of CBD oil and see what people are saying. Then talk to some friends. Call them up. People need to be hearing from people now. They'd appreciate it. Find out who you know who's using CBD oil. I bet you know somebody. See what they say. And then when you decide that you're going to try this, because all these people can't be wrong, go to ancientlifeoil.com. They're having a huge sale on all sorts of supplements and CBD oils, all different flavors, grades, everything you want. Then at checkout, enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K. Click apply. You get free shipping on top of the great sale prices. You're saving money left and right. You're helping out the show, helping out a sponsor, and you're helping out yourself, ultimately. So go to ancientlifeoil.com. Enter promo code Derek at checkout so they know that you came from here. And you'll thank me for it, and your body will thank you for it. Alrighty, let us go to the bow, shall we, ladies and gentlemen? It's a really fun conversation and interesting, and we get into everything you want to know about. James Golden, a.k.a. Bo Snerdly. Okay, as we've been doing throughout this self-quarantine coronavirus pandemic, we're talking to people around the country that you might be interested in hearing from. And today is a little different. Nobody wants to hear from this guy. I'm just kidding. It's a returning champion. It's my buddy James Golden, my friend down in Florida, also known as Bo Snerdly, who I don't personally like. I like James. Bo, I have no use for. How you doing, James?
Well, I'm doing okay, Mr. Hunter. How are you doing?
We're doing well up here. We've got a lot of cases and a lot of mess. Grocery stores are kind of bare, but we're holding out. How is the situation?
Money up in that way that you people are spending a lot of money up there.
Yeah, we are. And one of the things that is going to be interesting after all of this is the people who dug themselves huge holes with credit cards to stock up on a year and a half's worth of toilet paper and canned goods. Soup sales and toilet paper sales are going to plummet after this thing is over. And people are going to be stuck with a 22% interest rate on all the things that they have down there. I'm not sure that people are really considering that so far. Is it bad down in Florida? You guys aren't under quarantine yet. The governor is getting a lot of criticism for being too loosey-goosey with things.
Well, the governor's not being loosey-goosey, and I'm amazed at some of the criticism. I mean, we've had orders here for a while for the restaurants to only do takeout. And people understand here, and they're pretty much following it, that they should only go out when they have to. Of course, we had those pictures that came from the kids on the beach doing what teenagers do, being irresponsible. That's part of the passage of being a teenager. In fact, in Tampa, it turns out some of the college students were infected with COVID-19. But, okay. Most of them, if not all of them, will survive it because most young people do survive it, which is one of the reasons that they feel invincible And we were young once, and we were once feeling invincible too. So the governor down here, in my estimation, has done a great job. And I think people being critical of him need to just back off.
Well, I think the part of the problem, though, James, is the people tend to project what they see everywhere. You know, New York is saying, my God, this is horrible, and you can't go. But people in Montana walk out and go, I don't see what the problem is, because every person has like 15 square miles to themselves out there. So when people sitting at home see people on spring break doing body shots off of each other and trying to hook up and all of that stuff, they recognize that people are young and stupid, and everybody's young and stupid. It's just the problem is too many people are not growing out of it. But they also know that they're going to go home. And when they go home, yeah, they will probably be able to fend it off. But mom and dad might not be able to. Grandma, that could mean that you can't go visit grandma and grandpa for 2 weeks at a time when you need to visit grandma and grandpa. It just... That, I think, was the biggest problem with it. There was some jealousy. There was some, oh God, these idiot kids. There's a lot of that. But in general, I think people understand the domino effect that it can have.
Really? Do tell. Okay, we have been through so many pandemics and so many flus in this country before. H1N1. Six, as you know the numbers, Derek. 60 million Americans infected. Okay. 300,000 in the hospital, 12,000 dead, country still open. You go through any other flu season and you hear, oh, wow, this is a really bad flu season, because almost everybody you know or someone in their family sick with the flu. And out of that, people die every year. I'm not trying to be cavalier about this. Mm-hmm. It's serious. People, I'm in one of the risk groups. I've had respiratory issues. I'm being really careful. I'm trying to be really careful. Okay. But at the same time, I'm sorry. I do have some reservations about watching the way that this is being handled in compared to the way other pandemics in this country were handled. I remember when the Zika virus was going around, people were scared of that too, because
yeah, that hit Florida pretty hard.
That's right.
We didn't go. My wife was pregnant at the time. We didn't go visit her parents because of Zika.
And that's right. Because because when Zika affected pregnant women, very often the babies were affected horribly. Right. So we knew that. And I remember very specifically that there were a group of people. I think it was in San Diego. It was on the West Coast that were protesting some of the open border situations there. And people, the news media's attitude was that these people protesting were bigots. They were xenophobes. Mm-hmm. And now the very same people that were calling those people xenophobes are saying, oh, we have to be careful about letting people in. We have to close down everything. Really? I'm just amazed at some of the hypocrisy on the governmental level that this has happened. Again, I want to stress, I am taking it seriously. I think people need to take it seriously. They need to be cautious. They need to be very cautious and not put themselves in harm's way, especially if they are a member of a group that could be potentially afflicted. But I'm just saying, we've been through other pandemics and we haven't seen this kind of reaction.
Well, what do you think is the X factor that is making this one different? I think it could be the fact, the ease of spread and the speed of spread, that one person can infect so many people before they even know they have it.
And the fact that this virus apparently lives on surfaces for so long. There are reports that this thing can live for several days. Right. So I think that that's part of the mix as to why people are being especially frightened by it. I think that you're right. But I also think that there's another component to it, too. The fear that we see being generated in a lot of quarters is, look, doctors, of course, will tell you what doctors should tell you. Lock everything down. We want to kill this thing 100%. We cannot afford to kill the American economy because of a pandemic. And that's what many people are frightened over. And that's what I think I'm most concerned with. The fact that we are going to, we look like we want to shut down this entire economy and stay closed as a country for as long as it takes to get rid of this thing. And by the way, there's a new disease that just popped up today, the HANA virus or something else in China. Are we going to do this every time?
Well, I think we all need to just laminate ourselves and work virtually. I think we're going to put ourselves into the matrix. That'll be the way to go. But honestly, though, there when it does pass, and it will pass, these have always passed. When it does pass, how do we recover? The economy, the fundamentals of the economy are strong. There's no question about that. And before this, the economy was rolling along just fine. 3.5% unemployment, real wages going up, especially for people at the bottom. Everybody knows the numbers. But there's going to be an adjustment time. Say the buzzer sounds and the purge is over and all clear is signaled. We can all go back to our lives. There are going to be a lot of people, myself included, for a little while, because not because of me, but because of my kids and my wife, where it's like, am I going to want to go to a restaurant, even though they say it's okay? I think until we have a vaccine that is proven, and that's going to take a while, there's going to, even when it subsides, as hopefully it will with summer like the flu normally does, I think there's going to be a period of time where we have an eggshell economy, where everybody's really jittery, and the second they see a waiter sneeze or cough or something, they're done. They're out of there, and there's going to be a lot of people who won't go out again for a while, or at least won't resume even half of what they used to do until there is a vaccine. Am I wrong about that, or is the human mind one thing that we'll just forget about it after a couple of weeks?
I don't know. I hope that you're wrong. I don't know. I hope you're wrong about it. But what you're saying seems to me to be very logical. People are not just going to say, okay, we're all done. Ooh, let's go back and do everything we did. No. I tell you what I'm concerned about, and I think what needs to happen is that we need some structural changes in this country. Because of this virus, I don't want to hear any more about borders and not having border controls from the left. Hello? Hello? This is another thing. I don't want to hear that bullshit, that stuff anymore.
You can swear. You can swear.
I don't want to hear anymore that we need most of our antibiotics made in China because it's cheaper.
Right.
I don't want to hear anymore that we can't manufacture a face mask in the United States because it's cheaper to do it in China or China.
But that should be, I mean, the stimulus bill that Congress is ramming through, I don't know if you call it a stimulus, a bill, a relief, whatever you want to call it, has, of course, a bunch of Nancy Pelosi's wet dream policies in there, but it doesn't seem to address what we need. Is what you're talking about. It really realistically could be a one-page bill. Okay. People who are who lose their job during this time are going to be made whole. Businesses will be kept afloat. And by the way, there's massive, massive tax incentives. You can pretty much never pay taxes again if you start a company to manufacture antibiotics, to do the medical equipment that we need. It shouldn't have been that complicated, yet it was. And it wasn't just because Nancy Pelosi flew on her broom back from San Francisco on Sunday and suicide bombed the bipartisan deal that Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer had worked on. The deal that Schumer and McConnell originally worked on was going to be slightly less bad and slightly less long. It was always going to be bad and always going to be long. It was the opportunism of the political moment. So why should the American people trust either party going forward?
Because they know that the turtle, Mitch McConnell, didn't have a choice, and they understand that President Trump doesn't have a choice in all of this. Everybody's big girls and boys here. We've seen how the media has played this thing already. Now, can you imagine if President Trump or Mitch McConnell said, "Oops, here's our middle finger. No, we're not signing a bill because it has this, 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 and all these liberal carve-outs in it, And it doesn't matter. The simple fact that they, that if President Trump said, I'm refusing to sign this bill, or if Mitch McConnell said, I'm refusing to put this up to a vote, they would be vilified, probably put on a stake in the public square, given all the fear-mongering and all the fear that the media has created over this COVID virus. So they had to sign it, and we knew it was going to be bad. We knew that it was going to be $2 trillion bad, and it is $2 trillion bad, but they didn't have a political choice in this. And hopefully some of the things that they got as their gimmies will offset some of the things like the Kennedy Center
getting $25 million bucks.
Yeah, exactly. So
is Nancy Pelosi, was that a strategic mistake to put out her version of the bill, do you think? To let the world see what she's really about? Because most of the time, that would have gone unnoticed because most people aren't paying attention. But you're looking at the president's daily coronavirus task force briefing getting 12 million viewers. That's massive. That's Monday Night Football numbers. You're looking at people paying attention because they're scared to death and want to know what's going on, but they're also paying attention because they got nothing else to do. So what would have fallen through the cracks if it were just a regular old omnibus spending bill is now having not a full light shine on it because the Democratic media is never going to do that. But it has much more light shown on it to highlight these things. It could come back to bite her in the ass, I think.
Really? Oh, good. Because I don't think so. I have yet to see any negative story about it, except maybe one on Fox News that pointed out that the Kennedy Center got the money that they wanted. Everybody else is just hailing the deal. Nobody's saying, oh, look at all the crap that Pelosi put in it and got it. Look at all the crap Democrats were trying to hold up for you. No one is being critical of Nancy Pelosi, except us on the conservative side. And guess what? Our side already didn't like Nancy Pelosi.
No, but I think there are more people listening. Look, the Rush Limbaugh show has at least 20,000 listeners a day, I think, somewhere. My math could be off on that.
Quite a few people listening.
And I bet that those numbers are up because people are available to listen and people are curious to find out. You know, people who work during the day, who listened to Rush while they were in college, are now home during the day. And they go, you know what? I haven't listened to Rush in a while. I'm going to give that a shot. So in that way, yeah, forgive the terminology, but it could spread in a viral way, the information. It doesn't have to be shouted by David Muir on the ABC Nightly News for information to get out there. That's one benefit we have on our side, is the alternate avenues of communication that the left absolutely hates for this very reason. So I think that if those are leveraged properly and even naturally, which I believe they are, more people will know about these things.
Again, I hope you're right. I am just, when it comes to this kind of thing, ever biting Democrats in the butt, I just ask one simple question. When has it ever happened? And this time, maybe. Okay, maybe. And you're right. There are a lot of people paying attention. But I don't think a lot of people are going to be nearly upset with the Kennedy Center getting some money if they get a $1,200 check in their mailbox.
Right. Okay?
That takes away a whole lot of anger. That takes away a whole lot of it. Hey, I got my goodies. There was some stuff in there I didn't like. Okay, I got a check. All right? End the story. I got a check. Or they're helping me with my business. Or I can go here and apply for a loan. Or I got money over here. Or I got a tax break over there. I think that's the stuff that people are going to remember out of this bill. Not whether the Kennedy Center got broken off.
Well, maybe you're right. It's happened once or twice before. So you could be right again this time. So in terms of politics and in naked political terms, and I hate to use this phraseology of the question, but it's just a normal phraseology of the question, just horrible circumstances. Who's the winner in this?
I think President Trump is going to be reelected, so I don't think he's the loser in it. I think there is no winner this time. I think that President Trump will be reelected despite of this. Mm-hmm. I don't think this has changed the equation politically. I think no. President Trump was going to be elected before this happened. I think when this is this, we are certainly not going to be where we are today in November. People will have gotten money in their pockets. The economy will start to pick up no matter what. It's not going to be where it is today. And I think, okay, even if the economy's not where it was, even if employment numbers are high, we've seen what Trump can do with an economy and see what Democrats can do to an economy. And I think that that's the message. And I think he'll still win on the economy, no matter where it is. Who would you trust to build an economy that's been devastated back in short order? Why? President Trump. He's done it already. He can do it again. Okay, and so I think he wins on that.
The alternative is Joe Biden. Have you ever seen a candidate disappear more quickly and more completely than Joe Biden has in this?
Joe Biden, with these trying to do these daily briefings, has so embarrassed himself. It's embarrassing. I cringe for Joe. It's like, Joe, really, do you have to end your career like this? This is embarrassing. And it's not fun to look at. I take no glee in seeing a guy that was once vibrant, that was once, you may have had political difference with Joe Biden, and Joe Biden's, you know, the ethical side, as we've learned about Hunter and the rest of it. Those ethical questions will remain, but as a person, Joe Biden was always a pretty nice guy.
And he's affable, very affable.
Yeah, and it's just sad to see what's happening to him. This is not pleasant to look at.
It kind of raises an interesting question. Do you know who Sean Parnell is?
I've heard the name.
He's a best-selling author. He's a former Army Ranger, did 440 some days straight of combat in Afghanistan. He now writes thrillers, and he's running for Congress, Pennsylvania, against Connor Lamb. And I talked to him Monday or Tuesday. And I asked him, because he's a challenger, he's got name recognition, he's got all of that, but in the time when the House is really in play, because it's a district that is, it used to be, it went for Trump in 2016, the judges redistricted Pennsylvania, but it's still an R+3 or 4 district. And that it would normally suit him very well. It's a blue-collar district, he's a blue-collar kind of guy, but he can't campaign. And there is no House race, no House challenger in the fight to take back the House of Representatives that can campaign, at least in a traditional way. A tweet only goes so far. Phone calls only reach so many people. It's not door knocking. It's not being seen at the events. How does this impact Republicans' chances, you think, of retaking the House come November?
It's a challenge, no doubt, but there are other ways to campaign. I think people are going to have to use television a lot more. And by the way, there are ways that one can do that very effectively. I think people are going to have to use digital media a lot more. There are ways people can do that very effectively. I think Republicans, for the most part, are going to have to get their act together on social media. When you look at the way they use social media, many of these House members, compared to the way that the Democrats use social media, they've got a long way to go. And I think that their people are going to have to adapt. That's what it's all about. Look, the Democrats can't campaign either. So this is like,
But they can fundraise with the power of incumbency. They can call up a lobbyist and say, hey, I need money. Whereas a challenger can't do that because they have nothing to offer.
Well, you know, fundraising has always been an issue, but let's not forget that before this cycle, Republicans were the incumbents, and they managed to get beaten by people that weren't incumbents. So it is incumbent upon the challengers to figure out how to raise some dough, how to stretch the money that they can get. And I'm telling you, I know for a fact that there are ways that people can do this.
Have you gone to the grocery store lately down there in Florida?
Yes. I went to the grocery store 2 nights ago.
How was it?
It was cool, you know. I wore my gloves.
Right. I do too. It's very weird. I usually go in the middle of the night. And the first time I went, I thought of you, actually. If it weren't 2:30 in the morning, I was going to call you because you would have been screwed at my grocery store. The produce section was gone. There was, there were some apples and some pineapples and some cucumbers, and that was it. Everything else was literally gone. Bags of potatoes, bags of onions. It's since the times I've been since, it's much better. There's been produce, but that first time it was a little freaky. It was like out of a zombie movie.
Yeah, the only thing missing out of our stores are all the medical. Like, this is one of the first times in my life that I walked down the aisle. They stock all the medicine in the grocery stores, and use some of it's still there, but a lot of the stuff that deals with cold and flu symptoms are gone. All the alcohol based products gone, all the toilet paper gone, of course, and this whole toilet paper thing still cracks me up. I mean, I'm still trying to get my arms around this.
That's why I don't like if you gotta go. But if you don't have any food, you're not gonna need the toilet paper. So the food should be the priority. And secondly, if it really comes down to it, most of the time you're right next to a shower, right?
Let's not get ugly here with these kind of
issues. But after you do your business, you could go take a shower. I'm just saying, of all the things that are necessary in life, I think a can of soup would be much more important than a roll of toilet paper.
I don't know how the whole toilet paper thing started, because, you know, it didn't start here. It started in Australia, that there was a run on toilet paper. And it was like, huh?
Well, they are down under.
Okay. And then there was a rumor that people were thinking that they could get the toilet paper to make masks, because there was a shortage of masks. So, okay, you're going to wrap the toilet paper around and around your head and form a mask with it. Really creative. But it just goes to show you what an S-storm this whole thing has turned out into.
No, it really has. Our people, like, one of the things, I mean, I wrote a book about media manipulation called Outrage Incorporated, which you should buy now, available on Amazon. And I still fall prey to it. There are stories that I watch where I think, oh, all right, we're doing all right. This is nothing. We're going to be fine. And then there are some stories I watch where it's like, oh, my God, we're all going to die. Holy shit, I've got to really, you know, I've got to make sure that I don't go near anybody, don't touch anything. I go out, I literally go to the mailbox with gloves and wipe down with a disinfecting wipe each piece of mail that I don't immediately throw away because it's junk. It's a national mood swing. It's like we've suddenly become bipolar without the rage, just paranoia.
Well, I was flying. I was in Dallas when they were shutting everything down in Florida for the weekend. I was down in Dallas for that weekend, and I was staying at this incredibly big and beautiful hotel, and it was a ghost town. If I saw like five other guests, and they laid off the whole staff. I did talk to one of the managers. He said they were losing $1 million a day at this hotel. And it's, you know what? That's the kind of stuff that breaks my heart, because some of these people are not going to get their jobs back. Some of these people are going to be out of work for a while, because it is going to take a time to build up that kind of business again. A lot of these were conventions that come in there and people, you know, who planned out. And so all of these things have been canceled, and it's going to take a while for people and groups to replan, reschedule, rebook.
Even have anybody willing to attend. Until there's a vaccine, I don't think many people are going to attend.
And that could be the case. So a lot of these people are going to be out of work. And then you have the kind of hysteria that has happened in some fronts. Look, we know who are the most affected groups. I'm in one of them. So, yeah, I better be careful.
Black conservatives is an affected group.
No, the old folks with like respiratory stuff, you know, older.
I know, sir. Yes, sir. Old man, sir.
Thank you, youngster. Yeah, but that's okay. Some of the people in your age have died, by the way.
I know.
Saying
a lot of them died eating aquarium cleaner.
Oh yeah, that was a brilliant one. Yeah.
Really, you know, let's talk for a second here about the media coverage, because you would have thought that the other night Donald Trump snuck out of the White House, took Air Force One out to Arizona, found a random couple, lured them in with a false sense of security, and then butt funneled some aquarium cleaner into their bodies to try and prove some weird thesis that he had by the tone of the media coverage that he has been subjected to for a story he had nothing to do with. An ingredient in aquarium cleaner that gets rid of parasites and fish has a similar name to hydrochloroquine. And all the stories are, oh my God, a drug that Donald Trump was touting today killed some people. And the governor of Nevada banned the stuff. He banned doctors from prescribing it.
The kind of hysterical stupidity I'm talking about. This is just plain stupid. This is beyond the pale stupid. It was beyond the pale stupid for the guy to take it. It was beyond the pale stupid for the news media to report on it the way that they have. And this is the kind of stuff that if we don't get a handle on how the hate Trump media is reporting news in this cycle, then I don't know. We're destined to repeat this. Look, can we all agree that if Obama were still the president under these same circumstances, that not only would the reporting of everything be different, but perhaps there would be a lot less general hysteria?
Yeah. No, you're right. And I wrote a column last week called We're Paying the Price for the Death of Journalism. And that's really what this is that we have there's no safe place to go. I'm going to go to this place because I know they're going to give me the unvarnished truth. They're not going to lard it up with a bunch of spin or opinion. Or when you watch CNN, it's the same freaking people they had on a month ago talking about the election, talking about coronavirus. And you know, you're not getting information there. You're getting spun.
That's exactly right. And this is. And if you read the Washington Post, it's like, you know, no matter what day it is, the Trump hate is just going to fall off the front page to the back page, because that's what that newspaper has become. It's your daily Trump hate sheet. If you read the New York Times, it's the Trump hate sheet for New York. If you go in and you look at MSNBC, if you look at CNN, it's all Trump hate all the time. If you look at certain shows on the other network, you'll get a little bit of that Trump hate even sprinkling in there. So it is a death of journalism, and I think that it has affected the entire way this story has been reported from beginning to end.
Now, last time we spoke, I think it was the last time we spoke, you had just started a group to reach out to recruit black conservative candidates.
Yeah. New Journey Pack. New Journey Pack.org. By the way, you can go there and see our first commercial, NewJourneyPack.org. NewJourneyPack.org. It's going well. Like everything else, we've taken a slowdown during this time, but we are making plans and using this time wisely to do work on the creative side to help make the kind of long-term plans that we want. And we were getting some traction before COVID-19 hit. I think when COVID-19, when the scare lessons, will be back to gaining more traction.
Are you seeing any openings because of this? Are you seeing any opportunities? Anybody particularly, any cities handling it particularly poorly? Any districts where you think a member of Congress, Jerry Nadler, asking for $4 billion for nonprofit museums, making sure that's important to be in the bill? Garbage like that. Is there anybody distinguishing themselves not in a good way that you're noticing across the country where people should be maybe focusing some energy? Mm-hmm.
You just mentioned Nadler. I would take a look at some of these people that were holding up the stimulus bill in favor of all of these ideological wish list items. And yeah, we're going to message to that. And those are the kind of creatives that we're putting together right now. I think the Democrats have shown themselves to be less than statesmen at a time when our country was calling out for true statesmen. And I think that they should pay a price for it. I don't know whether ultimately they will, but we're going to try to help ensure there's some accountability there. I think some of these people that have used this time to go after Donald Trump instead of actually trying to help find solutions need to be called out on it. And we're going to certainly call people out on it. We're concerned about the job loss that this is going to have and the areas that it's going to have. And look, we were doing so well under President Trump with minority unemployment. Now, if there are some people that are not coming back to work, I can pretty much promise you that a lot of the last hired, first fired, are going to be once again the last hired. Mm-hmm. And how that resonates for minority communities, not just African American, but for Hispanic communities, for people that are on the lower end of the socioeconomic ladder, I think that it's going to be questionable. So we're going to be messaging to that quite heavily.
I have a theory. I'm probably going to write about it for Sunday that might be of interest to you, run by you, because it is, again, it came up with my Sean Parnell interview, because I don't live anywhere near the 17th district in Pennsylvania. I live in an incredibly deep blue district that there's literally nothing that's going to get this congressman that represents me out of office. But that doesn't mean that I shouldn't care about what happens in Pennsylvania, that I shouldn't care about what happens in Adam Schiff's district, who they vote for. In mostly these 35 districts where Donald Trump won it, but it now represented by a Democrat, have this. So I'm going to propose this adopt a district thing. Instead of throwing money at the local Republican Party in a place with a D plus 30 district, get realistic, get strategic, find a candidate that you like out of the list of 35 and support them. It doesn't have to be monetarily. You can phone bank remotely. You can do all sorts of things remotely. You just start using social media to promote them, whatever it is. Because while Adam Schiff doesn't represent me, Adam Schiff's votes impact me just as much as my member of Congress's votes does. And I don't think the Republican Party, maybe it harkens back to 1994, where the Republicans nationalized the House races. But something like that, I think, needs to be done, certainly by somebody much more with a bigger megaphone than I have.
Well, you know what, though? The bigger megaphone, if you present the idea, then that gets to somebody that has a bigger megaphone. And then it goes from that maybe slightly bigger megaphone to a huge megaphone. And all of a sudden it becomes, shall we say, viral? Yeah. So it's a great idea. I want to see this article because this is a really good idea you have, Derek.
It was bound to happen sooner or later, wasn't it? The odds. It just had to happen sooner or later. But it's driving me nuts because there's literally Jamie Raskin is my member of Congress. There's nothing I can do to beat Jamie Raskin.
Yeah, getting rid of her.
So it doesn't matter. And so someone like a Sean Parnell is just the one who comes to mind because he happens to be a friend of mine. But there are so many potentials out there where people can get involved. James, yeah, go ahead.
No, this can be big fun, too, because we can have a list of districts that are the most adoptable, the most vulnerable districts that need adoption the worst. We could definitely do that.
Yeah, that could. Perhaps we should speak again off air about this idea, yes. James Golden. Listen, before we let you go, and I appreciate you taking the time, we got to ask how Rush is holding up. You know, he's having a rough time with chemo, but it's important that he does it, and we're all pulling for him.
I will tell you that we are steadfastly optimistic that we know that Rush is fighting really hard and that he really wants to come back. And maybe by the time this interview airs, he will be back on the air. Every day we keep thinking, okay, today's the day he's going to be back. But he's having a rough go with the chemo and with the side effects of the chemo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we just want him to come back healthy. And
his health has to be the top priority.
That's right. So no matter how many days he needs to stay out to make sure that he's healthy when he comes back, we're down with it. We'll keep the fort open. We'll keep it running. And we just want to welcome him back with loving arms when he comes back. But we want him to be well.
Now, I know there are a lot of people who work on the Rush Limbaugh show. I happen to be friends with two of them, Dean and Keith, and I know they listen to this podcast. So if you could fire them over the air, seriously, though, if you wanted to, I'd be down with that. How is the rest of the crew holding up? Is everybody's health well? I mean, it's the coronavirus. Well, you guys taking care of the social distance and all that good stuff?
Well, you know, first of all, I'm not in the same location as Dean and Keith.
No, so, I know. And lucky for
them. You know what? So, yeah, I'm cool because I'm really distanced from them. But, I mean, they were like, you're fired. No, man. Our crew is, you know, the thing about it is we are family. We have been working together, all of us, so long.
Forever. It's impossible to get in there because nobody leaves.
Exactly right. And so, like, Dean and Keith and Allie and Susan and Paul and everybody in New York and all of the crew, Mike Mamone, everybody, you know, we're all worried about Russ. We're all worried about each other. We're family. And so, you know, one of the blessings about working with the Rush Limbaugh Show is not just working with Rush. It's the people that Rush selected to work with him, right? So our staff, these are some of the most amazing people that you will ever meet on the face of the earth. And I think one thing goes, you know, we may bicker with each other on occasion over little stupid stuff, but we all love each other immensely, and we love our boss. And so we're just going to pray for his recovery and complete recovery and pray that we all can stay safe and healthy as much as we can.
I tell you, doing a show that leads right into Rush, I still, back from, I think it was 1989 as a kid in Michigan on WXYZ at the time radio, when the Pretenders comes on, you still get that same level of excitement. You hear that bass line rolling. So, yeah, to hear Rush, I want to hear Rush's voice back behind the mic. I want to hear Rush's healthy voice. I want to hear Rush announce that he's okay.
Yeah, I know. We, God willing, that'll happen soon. And by the way, what do you use as a theme song, Derek?
A song
called... Do you have a theme song? Does someone let you use their music? Do they know that you're using their music?
They're an Italian band, so they may not be with us anymore. It is a song called Bang Bang to the Rock and Roll by an Italian band called Gabin that was featured in the first Fantastic Four movie in a montage scene. It's just got a nice beat, gets my energy going. I wanted to use the Replacements, I Will Dare, but my old radio station wouldn't let me do that because they didn't like that I liked the Replacements. They didn't like much about me. But I like this song because it gets my blood pumping. So that's what it is. And if the Italians want to come after me, we save them from a war. Let them try.
Goodness. They're having their own problems right now. You might not be on their radar screen.
Not yet. That's what I'm counting on. But I also think they're grateful for the exposure because they're a small Italian band nobody's ever heard of. Anyway, James Golden, any last message for people out there before we thank you and send you on your way?
Stay strong. Stay strong. Stay healthy. Stay safe. Don't take this as a joke. It's not a joke. But at the same time, enjoy as much of your life as possible and give thanks. To our creator for every single day that we wake up and we're able to breathe.
Amen. Oh, I just got an email from the president says that I should be guest hosting for Rush. We'll have to talk about that.
Yeah, we'll
talk anyway.
Here.
James Golden, give the website again for your project.
NewJourneyPack.org. Or if you want to do the shortcut, MAGA.black.
There you go. James Golden, the man, the myth, the legend. Thank you for coming in. Thank you guys for listening. That's all the show we have today. But we'll fill the cup back up tomorrow on Friday. We'll see you then.